Thank you, Ken. Thanks, Regina, for your teaching. It was fabulous as always. Before we start our discussion, I thought I would play a short song from Mr. Nobody. Get us in the mood here. Here we go. I think it's going to play. Let's see. That's great. yeah, it was fun to watch too. It's the Cordettes, a 1958 song. It's a cute little four girl. Anyway, ensemble. So welcome everybody to our movie discussion group. As Ken said, our movie this month was Mr. Nobody. As I told a couple of them I watched the movie with, and looking at some of the commentary on the movie, I saw that, as you who watch the movie know, the fellow's first name was Nemo. So his name was Nemo Nobody. And I found that Nemo also means nobody. So the guy's name was Nobody Nobody. I hope you enjoyed the movie. I know that the movie was difficult to follow. Anyway, it was a little unusual. It was a movie that allowed for multiple timelines stemming from multiple choices. What I'd like to do is invite you to tell us your thoughts about the movie. Listen, I want to say that I spoke to somebody the other day that said, well, I was talking about participation in movie group, and this person said, well, you know, one time I said something about a movie, and you said, nope, that's wrong. And they said, well, I don't need this crap. So if I have ever given that impression, please, please, please know that I'm getting better at this, at facilitating this group, I hope. All thoughts are welcome. There is no right answer. Really, the movies are designed to facilitate our inner looking, and of course that's going to be different for everybody. So whatever answer you came up with, you're right. So having said that, I truly want to open the floor to you to give your thoughts on the movie. If you like, you can start with the play sheet. The first question on our play sheet is same as it always is, and that is, if you were to rename this movie from a spiritual or truth perspective, what name would you give it? I know Ken told us at dinner the other night what his name was. There he is. Ken, please take the mic.
Yes, well, I had two names for it, and I told you one of them, but one of the first name I came up with is No Decision is Still a Decision. And that's what Nemo, the way I read it, was he never made a decision. He played all possibilities, which in the end was like going to the racetrack and betting on every horse. He ended up being completely losing track of every one of his bets or every one of his choices. And the other name was All Choices Are Good or All Choices Are the Same. So that's my answer. Now it's oh, Becky says no, so
Yeah.
giving the mic back to you.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks, Becky. Becky didn't make a choice. No. Thank you, Ken, for sharing your perspective on that. We appreciate it. And Jay has his hand raised, but before we go to Jay, I'm going to read Kathy's comment. Her comment is, "I didn't watch it. Does that make me a nobody?"
Can't be somebody.
No,
Yeah,
Kathy,
no.
you're somebody. All right, here's Jay. Go
All
ahead, Jay.
right. Mine is experience your life fully and then let it be undone.
Okay.
That's my new title.
That's a good
Yeah.
one. That's a good one. Mine was a quote that, and basically it's the same as one of Ken's. It was a quote from old Nemo, and that's every path is the right path. Yeah. Yes, Kathy, we love you. We don't just like you, we love you. Does anybody else want to share their title? Or again, we're not wed to this play sheet. It's just designed to facilitate some movement. Does anybody want to share their title or okay, in all, any and all thoughts? Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, it isn't an overly creative title, but I called it The Story of Choice. And I felt that it demonstrated that the choices we make are a part of, what the movie called the butterfly effect, but what we often hear call interdependent co-arising or the code. I thought it demonstrated that choice is a part of that, right? But no one choice is the totality of what happens. I think it also demonstrated that. Well, I don't want to go into this yet. I want to wait and say that later. So I'm not gonna go any further. But the story of choice, what you learn is that you make choices and there is an effect, but the effect is widespread. It's not just a personal effect. And the way that you are affected is not just from your personal choices, but also from choices that are made by people that you'll never meet that had no idea that their choices were affecting you. So all of the choices feed together into the unfoldment of what happens. So I called it the story of choice. I'll stop there for now. Thanks.
Yeah, Yeah, thank you, Regina. Yeah, I think it was a really good demonstration of that. And in fact, in several watchings, I caught things that that supported that idea. One of and I watched it four times before I caught the shoelace reference. When Nemo in one permutation, in one eventuality that happens, he goes with his mother. He catches her on the train, catches up with her, so he lives with his mother. In another, he misses catching up with his mother because his shoelace breaks. And they're and they show another scene where a fella is selling shoelaces. He's like, "I'll make you a good deal on these. These are pretty good." And then the guy, the sales, the guy, the factory guy he's selling the shoelaces to, easily breaks the shoelace, and he goes, "Oh, I'll make you a really, really good deal on it." But it, yeah, just that same idea that the things that we do, it's that whole butterfly effect. One that was pointed out again and again and again in the story. Jay.
I just have a small little point to throw in that at the very end of the movie, it came to me that the name Anna is spelled the same and pronounced the same whether you pronounce it forward or backward. And I thought they chose that name to illustrate that, time is done and undone, that both directions it has the same meaning either way. It's not, not a linear thing. It's not set. That's it.
Yeah, that's cool. They have, there's a word for there
I
is a
forgot the
word for
word.
that.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
I
don't
don't
know
know
what
if
it
that
is.
word. It's in English. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, like radar or Anna
Alliteration or
or
something.
something. Yeah. Thanks, Jay. The next question here on our play sheet is in what ways, and again, this is a relatively standard question that we have on the and on all of these play sheets, but in what ways, if any, were you able to identify with the main character, in this case being Nemo Nobody? And if you were able to identify with Nemo and want to share that, we'd like to hear from you on that. And Kathy, you said you didn't watch the movie. You got to watch it. You got to watch it four times. It gets better every time. Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, well, there was one scene where Nemo was on the beach, and Anna came up and invited him to go swimming, and he was focused on his sense of unworthiness, although he didn't know it, because he didn't know how to swim. And in fact, the last time he saw Anna was a little girl, and she was diving off the diving board, just perfectly. And when she and he was watching her through a open doorway, just through a crack. And when everybody left the pool, he went out and tried to do what she did, but he didn't know how to swim. So he did this huge belly flop from a high dive. Like, oh my gosh. And then he was basically drowning and someone rescued him. So fast forward, I don't know how many years, 8 years or something, and he sees Anna again on the beach. And she comes over and invites him to swim. And he saw her as a perfect swimmer, and her friends were all swimming, and this was something he couldn't do. And he became absorbed by his feeling of unworthiness. But the way he responded was he said something like, "They're all idiots, and I don't swim with idiots." And she walked away from him. She wasn't at all interested in him. And I'm trying to remember, I think that might have been the same lifetime where he went and jumped on a motorcycle and was all angry at himself for having ruined his chance with Anna and was driving too fast and angry, and he had an accident where he ended up in a coma. That just didn't work out well. So the same scene came again. And in that particular scene, when she came over and invited him to swim, this time, instead of being absorbed in that feeling of worthiness, he just fessed up and said, "I can't swim." And she was really touched by his sincerity and honesty, and she ended up staying with him, and a really nice relationship formed out of that. So back to, in what ways, if any, were you able to identify with Nemo Nobody? And I would say, you know, up until about age 44, 45 years old, until I started A Course in Miracles and started the purification process, I unconsciously made pretty much every choice I made in my life from unworthiness. You know, just like he made that choice to say, oh, they're idiots and I don't swim it with idiots, from unworthiness. And therefore, his life unfolded down a particular path because he believed and acted from his unworthiness. When I started doing the course and started looking at my thoughts and purification started happening, I realized that I had no idea who I'd be or how my life would have gone if I had not been driven by that belief. I mean, the choices of what I took in college came from my unworthiness because I thought I wasn't good enough for anything else. You know, the choices in jobs I took, just, you know, choice and some of the things I did to try and overcome my unworthiness. Like if I do this, I will, you know, look better than I am, and I got to look better than I am. And, you know, I was just completely driven by that idea. And I realized, you know, just like this movie, when he made a different choice that didn't come from his unworthiness by admitting that he couldn't swim, his life unfolded differently, right? Well, I realized when I was around 44, 45 years old, that if I hadn't believed my unworthiness, my life would have unfolded differently. It just would have, because that's where my choices came from. So I really identified with him in that scene where he made a choice from unworthiness and then got to play it again. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you, Regina, for sharing that. I said I identified with Nemo in that at least one scene, it seemed like he felt paralyzed by having to make a choice. And in fact, you know, some of the critics discussed it and talked about how well, and in fact, it was revealed at the end of the movie, you know, that this all of this was stemming from this 9-year-old's imagination. Yeah, that about what his possible choices were. But Nemo said, "We cannot go back. That's why it's hard to choose. You have to make the right choice. And as long as you don't choose, everything remains possible." And I think that was significant in this movie in a number of ways, but for me, I realized that I had really been feeling that way, and I began feeling that way a couple months ago. Just minor choices seemed I had so much going on that minor choices seemed paralyzing because I couldn't see the end of those choices because I felt like I didn't have enough information, and so. So I know that a number of times in my life I have not made a choice. I have lived with the status quo because because having to make a choice just seemed too overwhelming. So in that way, I identified with him.
Yeah, I identified with Nemo. I have divorced parents for one, just some physical circumstances related to my life. I've also had flashes of premonition of the future too, not to the degree that Nemo had, and also have made you know, some choices out of unworthiness in relationships too. Practicing a lot of the not choosing and just letting it be potential. And I've definitely gone through what Jacqueline just described about feeling like I don't have enough information to make the choice, but just being in that moment until I am chosen through. I don't know how else to say it. Like there comes a point where I need to know, and the Holy Spirit then tells, you know, it's like it becomes clear, yeah, okay, this is my choice. You know what I'm talking about? But if I screw it up, if I try to jump the rabbit and do that before with the brain, I've, you know, not made the right choice. You know, I mean, that's what Nemo said. That was a kid looking at the those two donuts, right? You've got to make the right choice. It's all about in my opinion, either donut really would have been the right choice. But,
All donuts are equal.
all donuts are equal. But, you know, it's like there's not a right choice as to which girl he was going out with. The right choice, as I interpreted it, was when I do it the right way, that's with spirit. that's the right choice. That's how I see it, rather than from the brain. Okay, I'm going to do it this way. And it's so ingrained in me, mostly with the gentle healing and the teachings from Martina. And, Jacqueline is a really awesome example of living her life from spirit, taking all kinds of risks and doing things that, she's afraid of anyway, just out of faith. That, I'm more feeling more powerful to do that, and I find that it works out fine. There's not a problem when you go with spirit. It's great.
That's awesome. I was going to say, you say, I find it works out fine. There was another liner. He said, old Nemo, 100 and however old,
18, right?
year old Nemo says, one of the things that he learned was that everything works out in the end, even badly. Right? So ultimately, the choice doesn't matter, right? Does anybody else want to talk about whether or not they identified with Nemo and in what way or anything else?
Do you have any question for?
Nope, I want
Ken, huh?
to give Ken the mic. Here's the mic.
Well, identifying with Nemo would be always in that questioning of, okay, I made a decision, but I had three choices. Like when I met Rebecca, I was had first date set up with Becky and three other women, and I chose Becky. So there was always that, well, what if I would have said no to Becky and chosen girl number one, girl number two, girl number three? And Nemo got to basically live all those out, whether they were his imagination or not. Well, and who knows whether all of this stuff that Nemo remembered actually happened? Or it was his imagination, he had really good imagination, or whether he had all these parallel lifetimes. Who knows? It's just, I look at it and go, no, I made the choice. I made the right one. All the others were removed from the option list. So, thank you.
That's great, Ken. Thank you for sharing. We really enjoyed Becky giggling in the background
Yeah,
as
you got
well.
points with Becky on that one for sure.
That's great. The next question on our sheet is, was there another character in the movie with whom you identified? And I'll throw that one out there. No. I can tell you that I identified with both Anna and with Elise. With Anna, it was really interesting because Anna was like a great character. I mean, she was. I mean, if you wanted to be somebody in the movie, it'd be Anna. Well, for me. She was pretty cool, but in one of the scenarios, she waited for Nemo all those years, but she said she decided that when they were forcibly split up at age 15, that she would just pretend to live, that she
That's
would
right.
that she had lived her life waiting for Nemo, forsaking all other possibilities for
Right.
that one. And so for me, I know that I've done that. You just make a decision and then you forsake all other possibilities and it's like, whoa, wait. And Nemo actually made that same kind of choice in one of the scenarios where he said, I'm going to have a pool, I'm going to have a red convertible, I'm going to have a, and all of these things. And
got bored.
So yeah, so it's interesting how Connie, I see your hand, and I'm going to give the mic to you. It's interesting how we can make a choice and then be so wed to that we can't.
Stuck.
We can't. Yeah, we can't extract ourselves from the choice that we've made. Connie, please take the mic.
Yeah, I was. I'm sorry. I wanted to address the question before and couldn't figure out how to raise my hand. And that was, you know, what we got out of the movie. And I seem to be coming at it. Sweet. I seem to be coming at it from just the opposite of what Ken was saying. And that is that. That the choices didn't really matter unless what matters is an experience of happiness, because they were all experiences, and he learned from all of them. That one relationship he had seemed kind of tragic, but you know, he was equally in. With a woman that was manic depressive or whatever the terminology is, he was just as involved in that relationship as he was with Anna. It didn't seem like the choice mattered unless we're saying, you know, unless we're qualifying the choice. And I get it where Ken's coming from. His choice to choose Becky was a choice for happiness, but you know, kind of reminds me of your talk this morning, in that it's all an experience. So we, you know, whoopee, I'm glad to be having the experience. Not that we want to suffer, but they're all just experience in life. That's what I got from it. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Connie, for sharing. It's good to hear your voice. I miss me some Connie. and certainly old Nemo says that. I've got notes everywhere here. That's what I call the movie, right? Every path is the right path. Everything could have been everything. Let's see. Everything could have been anything else, and it would have had just as much meaning, is what old Nemo said at some point. Ken, please take the mic.
Actually, it's Rebecca. When you talk about the character that I think I appreciated the most in the movie, I really liked the doctor, and then, of course, the modifications to the face with all the tattooing and such, but the young man who came in to record Nemo's story, and I could see how that's what we all do in life, is we always want to know what somebody else's story is, and we go to great pains to sneak in and get the story. And to me, it just evoked that sense of specialness. Like, you know, I've got the story as to what this man lived, and it supports the belief that there was a story. So I appreciated Nemo's whole persona in it. Like I said, I really was intrigued by the doctor, but the reporter really went to great lengths. And it's like, what then do you do with the story? You know, you've got it. What do you do with it? So he caught my attention, letting go of the mic.
Awesome. Thank you, Becky. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, just as a follow-up on that, listening to Becky is, you know, all these people were holding these stem cell compatible pigs to provide them all the organs and everything they need to just keep replacing their ailing bodies, you know, so they can live forever in the body. And it was a fascination, you know, to hear the story of this guy who's actually going to die. You know, for me, the thoughts about the guy with the face tattoo, I mean, this is kind of a transition into the Holy Spirit question four. To me, that the doctor represented the Holy Spirit because he was the one trying to help the old Nemo remember and continuing to be that influence to help him remember. And so the Holy Spirit is that voice that helps us to remember who we are. You know, apart from all of these seeming experiences that, you know, could be happy, sad, frustrating, fulfilling, unfulfilling, happy, not happy, you know, whatever they are, it's all just the generated experience. So that was, I wanted to share that thought on the doctor, the face painted doctor. And it occurred to me after watching it and seeing his face a bunch of times, they actually held a stencil over his face and spray painted it. Was it a, anyway, that's just an aside.
That would have been less painful than actually tattooing it. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, Ken and Becky, please take the mic.
And thank you, Jay, for going to the next question or the Holy Spirit question, because that's who I thought was representative of the Holy Spirit, was that doctor. And actually, though, I likened it to helping him remember, but also putting him back into the dream, using the hypnosis therapy treatment to put him back into the dreams. And I thought that was fascinating how, you know, pulling from one side and then pushing, it's almost like the pendulum swinging. You know, you're dreaming, you're not dreaming. So that's how I saw it.
Cool, thank you. Would anyone else like to address that question about the Holy Spirit, who you saw as the Holy Spirit in the movie? Yeah, for me, that's what I said, Regina, old Nemo. Yeah, and it, because you know, he could look back on all of it with dispassion about all of it, with the total knowledge that it was all perfect the way it was. Each life was perfect the way that it was. So that's why I picked old Nemo. Regina, did you want to talk about that? I guess if you'd wanted to talk about it, you'd have raised your hand. Okay. And Regina addressed this to some extent, and I'd like to hear the rest of your all's opinions, or more from Regina, or both. The next question we have on our sheet is, what does the movie indicate about choices?
I will respond if no one has a question or a raised hand. My answer is they all have equal meaning. They are the meaning you give them, and they all collapse at the end of time. Now, I just knew when that clock hit 9:50 or whatever it was that it was all just going to disintegrate. And lo and behold, it did. And it's like the collapsing, like all the choices you make, whatever they wind up to be, are all temporary anyway, mm-hmm. right? So did they really happen? Because if in reality all that exists never ends, then what ends isn't real. I mean, that's throughout a lot of the different teachings. And to me, it just helped me to like just breathe and be with all of my experiences and not regret anything I didn't do or did do in the past. Or, you know, it's like, you know what? I chose what I chose, and it's my little hero's journey or whatever, and it's perfectly fine. You know, it's like it helped me weed out any, like, I don't think I have any lingering regrets or stuff, but, you know, it's like an important reminder to me, you know, just to see that, that it all just to be happy with what is, you know, why, like what Ken said about, you know, I guess it was Ken, the right choice is the one that makes you happy. I don't know if it was Ken or Rebecca that said that, whoever, you know, if the right choice is the one that makes you happy, then being here in the present now, I'm happy because I'm not fearing, regretting, I'm not worrying. Oh God, I don't have enough information to make this decide. You know, I'm not doing any of that. I'm just enjoying here and now, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thank you, Jay. Would anyone else like to address this issue about what the movie tells us about choices or told you in your contemplation of it, about choices? Any insights there? Ken and Becky, please take the mic. And then Regina.
Can you say something? Yeah, no, I said I wanted the mic, but you want to say anything else? You know, I kind of commented this on dinner last night. I saw a great similarity in this movie regarding time as in the movie
Lucy.
And in the movie Lucy, she demonstrated that it appears there is time, but if you just, she would flip this wheel or move the time so fast it disappeared that nothing was there. And I saw that also, at least for me, it resonated in that regard, that the only reason we see or feel or believe there's choices is because we believe there's time. And the whole, I understand what Jay was saying, and I really concur with that, is that without time, there's no choices. And really, in the way I saw it, there are no choices anyway. Choices simply are beliefs. No choice is a choice as much as an action. So an action and a non-action, it just continues with this sense of duality. So I kept going back, and we only watched the movie halfway through. I will admit to that, because at a certain point it was like, I understand the message for me. I got whatever I needed to get from it, and that was enough. And it mostly was let go of this concept of time. It isn't about choices. It's the fact that there is no time. So letting go of the mic.
Cool, Becky. Thank you. Yeah, and that really, there's actually two questions on this sheet that are, yeah, that kind of are wrapped up with one another, as you pointed out. One is, what does the movie indicate about choices, and what does the movie reveal about time? So I appreciate you addressing both those issues. Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, well, as I said already, that I really felt that this taught what we study as the code, that, you know, individual choices are a part of the mix, but really what unfolds has to do with choices that are happening everywhere. In fact, Jasmine, what did you just yell a moment ago? About, yell it again so they can hear your sweet voice. Okay, Jasmine yelled when I didn't have the mic. She yelled, "It's the butterfly effect." Yeah, you know, which again we call the code or interdependent co-arising. But what I really want to address here, again, the question says, do the characters seem to be choosing their destinies, or does it seem they have no control over their future? And you know, if we're gonna zero in on the word control, if I have to pick yes control, no control, I'm gonna pick no control. Because again, control would mean only my choices affect me, right? That would be control, and that's just not the case. You know, my choices are a part of the mix, but actually even a very, very small part of the mix. You know, like Ken mentioned earlier about when he went on a date with Rebecca, you know, he had a choice of, I don't remember if he said three or four women. But, you know, prior to him having a choice of three or four women, there were circumstances in those three or four women's lives, which we could never capture them all, that led them to even be on that dating app. And the same thing, there were circumstances in Ken's life that we could never capture them all that led up to him being on the dating app, you know. So, like, there's just no way that we can capture, you know, why this happened. I love the way Nisargadatta says it, everything makes everything. And when you look at it from that point of view, there is no such thing as control. So that's my answer, is that there is no control. Even though there's apparent choice, there is no control.
Yeah, thank you, Regina. Thank you, Jazz. It's a butterfly effect. Jay, did you have something you want to say about?
We're out of time.
Huh?
Oh, no. Sorry. I just had a follow-up thought. Like, I had a thought when Regina was talking about we have, you know, no control. You know, there's the things that we think we set up, like if we go to school to learn a certain trade and then we engage in that trade, maybe we control the fact that we learned those skills in the college we went to, but maybe we don't exactly control where we wind up working. So I don't know, I kind of view it as a mixture. Like the things we think of are random, I think are the unforeseeable, unidentifiable sort of the whole affecting the whole effects mixing with what we intentionally chose to do. Like say, for instance, we studied a certain career path in college. But I guess you could then say, well, how did you even want to do that? Well, maybe that was an uncontrolled series of circumstances that even made you want to do that in the first place. So, I mean, you could just keep going on forever, you know. I just think, you know, the things we want to do, it's interesting to contemplate that it's just from this web of beliefs that any one web of beliefs doesn't amount to anything greater or less than any other web of beliefs, you know. So that's cool. Neat. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and we've looked at several of these questions. I'm going to skip down to question number 8, unless somebody has something before their additional that you'd like to add. But number 8 asks, what about the quote? As long as you don't choose, everything remains possible. What does that mean from a spiritual or from a truth perspective?
I have that when you choose, you collapse upon a certain outcome, like what the belief, but when you are lived through, the false self can unwind. And what came to me was, when I was writing this, was the image of a golf ball. If you ever break it open, there's all those rubber bands in there. It just unwinds. And also, there's a scientific principle called Schrodinger's cat that until you observe it, it doesn't have any form, you know, which is also what the belief teaching. So that's what I have.
Cool. Thank you, Jay. Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, what I had for number 8, you know, again, as long as you don't choose, everything remains possible. What that really reminded me of is the difference between the first principle of God and the second principle of God, which is something a little beyond what the mind can understand. But the first principle of God is referred to as unlimited potentiality. Interestingly, the second principle of God is not referred to as unlimited potentiality. And the reason for that is, in the second principle for God, a choice has been made. And that choice is the choice for a sense of self, or the, you know, what we call the I am presence, or what we call the subject or consciousness as the witness. You know, there's a choice has been made. And everything that comes out of the second principle of God comes out of that choice, like even the ego. You know, the ego is a personal sense of self. But the personal sense of self comes out of the I am presence sense of self. So you could say that at a divine level, the branch of possibility that we are following in this experience of the world is the possibility related from one choice, which is the sense of self, the sense of I am, right? And we have no idea because, you know, we just can't even fathom what those unlimited possibilities are that are in the first principle of God, you know, what the unlimited potential is prior to the sense of self. We can't even begin to imagine that because we are in, even though it seems like there's still unlimited personalities, the truth, unlimited potential, the truth is we are in a limited universe, limited by that second principle of God, by that choice. So so we're already in limitation. I mean, you know, we're in an experience of limitation. And but at the first principle of God, that's where everything remains possible, even things that we can't even begin to fathom, begin to imagine, because, our universe is limited. So that's what it made me think of. Also, you know, since right now we're going through NTI Romans, in NTI Romans 13, it points out, it says, the world is an image in the mind. And then it says, or better said, the world is a picture thought within the thought of spirit. It's interesting. The world is a picture thought within the thought of spirit, which means that the I am presence itself, or the second principle of God itself, is already a thought. It's already a choice. And the unlimited potentiality exists before that. It also, on a more simplistic level, you know, when you have a wall in your house that doesn't have a picture, you know, and there's just this blank wall and you know you want a picture there, it's unlimited potentiality for what you might hang there. But once you finally buy something and hang it there, then that's what it is. It's kind of like Jay said, you know, you collapse on a decision and that comes into being, right? That's what happens. But yeah, I think that probably what I really contemplated first, and in fact, it was very, I hadn't contemplated it in this way before, so it was very exciting and very enlightening to realize that the universe that we experience is limited based on the decision for I am presence at the level of second principle of God. And the ego, again, is a further limitation of that, right? This personal sense of self is a further limitation of that. But unlimited potentiality exists only at the first principle of God, where no choice has been made. Releasing the mic.
Wow, mind blown. because that takes it one step beyond what I had even begun to contemplate, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's like on the lowest level, the newness, like when we let go of a law, deeply held belief, we experience this newness, right? But what you're talking about is a newness at an entirely higher level, like before the mind at all. But yeah, I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah, that's yeah. Really cool. I said a while ago that I identified with Elise, in that you know, she had Elise got stuck on some fellow she thought she loved, and you know, and then she participated in this pain body thing where she was away from Stefano forever and ever and ever. And in fact, the you know, one of the cool things in that storyline was later, Elise ran into Stefano when she left Nemo. She cut Stefano's hair. She's in love with this. She's stuck in time with this Stefano from 20 years ago. Yeah, yeah, and she didn't even know she's cutting the guy's hair, right? So that's how you know how we lock ourselves in within the field of unlimited potentiality, right?
And don't even take advantage of what's right in front of us.
And don't take advantage of what's, that's right. Don't that even is, recognize the gifts that are right in front of us. Right. So, yeah, that's cool. Regina took it a step further, did she not? The final question on our play sheet is, what will you take away from this movie? That kind of really opens the floor up for you guys to just, you know, tell us what really impacted you in this movie. And the cool thing about this movie was there's so much there that, you know, it just, and it just stays with you, you know, the scenes come back to you. Yeah. Regina, please take the mic.
Yeah, first of all, I have my own sharing, but Jasmine just yelled out another answer, and I got to share what she said because it's very wise. She said, well, why don't you say it again? Not to what?
Don't marry someone that falls on the ground and screams and kicks and has a fit.
When you first meet them, yeah. Because, again, when he first, Jacqueline's laughing, when he first met her, Lisa, at least when, she says they knew each other when they were younger, but he didn't have a recollection of that. So when he first noticed her, you know, Stefano had just rejected her and she fell on the floor at a dance and was kicking and screaming and then walked right over to him and said, Nemo, you know, let's get out of here, or whatever she said. But then, you know, that's who she turned out to be, that emotional, overreacting person. And, you know, so right there she showed. And so Jasmine says, you know, that was a sign. Should have paid attention to that. So I thought that was pretty cool. But what I was going to say.
Which is much more spiritual.
No. I don't think it's much more spiritual. Actually, I have lots of notes that we haven't gotten to, and that's okay. I will just ignore all of them. But one thing that really impressed me was every path is the right path. Along with that, plus, it's like a formula, take every path is the right path, plus the end of the movie, when time started going backwards, and he was so excited, the old man was so excited, and the impression that I got was he is so excited to go through all of it again, you know, including things like the motorcycle accident, including things like when Elise died, including things like when he was ripped away from his lover at age 15 because the parents got a divorce, right? I mean, it kind of reminded me of what Jacqueline said this morning. Yay, experience! You know, it's just like, every bit of it is good, right? Everything is good. It's all good. And I just, you know, that's just really like, I just love that. You know, even though I had very deep thoughts regarding what the movie meant, just that excitement of loving every experience and really what a blessing each and every experience is. I think that's what stuck with me. Thank you.
Yeah, sweet, Regina. Thank you. Jay, go ahead.
Just as a follow-on on that, there was a scene in the movie where there was a bunch of kids in diapers walking around in this white heaven zone, and these angels putting a little shish mark, the indentation on your upper lip, and that these kids knew exactly what they were going to experience, the whole drama, and they were just in this utter acceptance of it. Did you see their faces? Yeah. Like, they knew, you know, whatever heartaches or whatever, and it was all okay. And it's like they just were all in joy, and they went into it. Like, you know, like Jacqueline said, woohoo experience. They had zero judgment. You know, there was no bad choices, just like what Regina said. It just that scene from the movie came to mind.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't connected those two. So, yeah, thank you. That's awesome. That's awesome. Who else would like to share what they will take away from the movie? Okay. Well, if you watch the movie, I encourage you to go back and watch it again. I'm amazed. You know, I watched it with Regina and Jasmine on, I don't know, 2-3 days ago, and then I watched it again with Jay again last night, and it was just still a great movie. So
I was bugging Jack. I'm having her pause, and she's like, just watch the movie, Jay.
Yeah, Jay's trying to figure it out as we went along. Oh, here's what Kathy took away from this whole thing. She says that maybe I should watch the assigned movie. Yes, Kathy, go back and watch it now. Yeah. And by the way, we are recording these, so if you didn't watch the movie and want to watch it now and go back and listen to this in light of that, you can do that as well.
I'm just sad that we can't hear Kathy's thoughts.
I know.
The movie. I was wanting to hear what her thoughts were.
Yeah, so you're depriving us all, Kathy. Yeah. Okay, now here's the thing. at this point in our program, I am supposed to tell you what we're going to watch next month. Right after the song went over today, at the beginning of the program, I went, oh!
I don't have the movie.
I can tell you that Regina and I have discussed a couple of movies. I don't want to put her on the spot, but I do want to put her on the spot. I'm going to let her guide if she will. Regina, we talked about The Diving Bell and The Butterfly. Okay. We talked about The Incredible Life of Benjamin Button or something, but you're okay to be on the spot? Good. Shall I turn the mic over to you, or do you want to... The Invention of Lying. Yay! That's a great experience! That's a great movie. Well done, Regina. So next month's movie will be The Invention of Lying. Guys, it was great, great fun being here with you and discussing the movie with you. I appreciate all the participation. It's just a lot of fun. So next month's movie, The Invention of Lying. We will see you on the fourth Sunday of next month. Okay. Yay. Night, everybody. Or lack thereof.